We are on and recording.
I guess I'll call this meeting of our Annexation and Zoning Committee to order. It's 8 o'clock. It's 8 o'clock on my car, anyway. We have all the members of the committee present. Katie Capellini, Sandy Hussman, Mark Lukey. We also have Mike Brown with us this morning, Mayor Stow, and Jim Moan, Kevin Holler, and Phil Sanford, and an esteemed reporter from the Toledo Blade. So our purpose this morning is to discuss continue our discussion of recreational vehicles and how we want to regulate them. We've had a number of meetings on this. I think our last meeting was in late June.
June 18th.
Yeah. Yep. It was 6/18. And coming out of that, I thought we had a consensus, but I think that's proven to not be the case. We also have a memo we received from the administration on this issue, dating back to late May. I guess where we're, let me kind of summarize where I think we are. I think we're, we seem to be in pretty uniform agreement that our current regulatory approach is to recreational vehicles isn't really meeting our needs in the community. We've had a number of complaints about recreational vehicles. We've had our neighbors in council meetings and in committee meetings providing us with good examples of situations where recreational vehicles that really are being mismanaged or misstored, if you will, on property. Recreational vehicles that are in bad shape or are detract from neighborhoods and from our community. And this a lot of this has come about because we changed our requirements back in 2010. It feels longer ago than that, but it wasn't that long ago. It was just before the change that we made in 2010, our code did not allow the storage of any recreational vehicle in excess of 19 feet in length anywhere. Now, it had to be, we had some further requirements regarding even storage of those vehicles, but the 19-foot limit would address most of the concern, I think all the concerns of that have been presented to us by the community in the last few weeks. But that goes back to the reason why we changed it in the first place, which is that we have a number of examples in our community of folks who have larger recreational vehicles that they put on paved surfaces, and they've screened them, and they're really not a problem in the particular neighborhood they're in. I think it's interesting, just driving up and down Ball 4, we see both extremes one boat, which is, I think, which we kind of uniformly agree really isn't appropriately stored and managed, and yet just somewhat further down the street, a homeowner who's built a pad for the storage of his recreational vehicle and screened it, and it looks very nice and kind of blends in with the neighborhood. Those are very different things. We came up with, in trying to come up with a consensus view of, from our last meeting, I came up with 12 points of how we would regulate those vehicles. Coming out of that meeting, while each of these points was discussed in the meeting, I've come to learn that we really didn't have a uniform agreement on moving forward with them. In particular, one of the things that we kind of came out of the meeting with was the idea that we would put some additional limits on recreational vehicles, particularly including a requirement that they would only be parked in a rear yard, that they could not be parked in a side or front yard, and also that we wouldn't allow them on corner lots, and that we would return to a size limit generally, which was a 20-foot length requirement. But we talked about the way to get around those incidents in which we had, in which our neighbors have constructed appropriate storage locations to maybe address those through some sort of site-specific zoning. We've talked about possibly securing a variance from the Board of Zoning Appeals. That issue in particular has proven to be not as well received, particularly by our administration, for fears of how we would administer that requirement. And I think as an alternative to that, if we decide we're going to go forward allowing larger recreational vehicles, I think the message I'm getting back from administration is they want some very specific standards in terms of what the circumstances under which we would allow larger recreational vehicles to be located. So with that, I guess what I'd like, you know, I've had some discussions with some of you about some of that. I guess to sum up where I think we are, we're talking about generally returning to a size limit on recreational vehicles, restricting those to rear yards, which will cause issues as well, by the way. Maybe trying to spell out some specific standards under which we would allow a larger recreational vehicle to be stored. Kevin, do you have I characterized your comments sufficiently there?
Yes. Our concern with the potential appeals process or whatever with the Board of Zoning Appeals is that still, that review, that process still has to have some criteria established. It's not fair nor is it advisable to have a 4 or 5 member panel say, I like food and I don't like bread. That's obviously too extreme, but if you're going to allow that process, what's the criteria by which they can inspect, allow those permits to be processed? I compare it to speed limits through throughout the city. In residential areas where there are lots of driveways, lots of houses, you have a speed limit of 25. In areas where the driveways are more spaced out, not as congested, it becomes to 35. In other areas where it's widespread and drives space larger than just the speed limit of 45, you adjust your criteria to the surrounding area. And if that's what council wants to do, then, you know, we need to establish where it's okay and where it's not okay. Because without that criteria, it can really become subjective. If I'm on the border going to fields and I don't come and I've been three houses down, I'm not going to be as inclined to approve the permit as the one that's on the other side of the city and doesn't really impact. So that's the concern is what's the criteria that we want to allow them or not allow them, and then let's just establish that as a criteria. If those are met, no issue. If they're not met, and again, we enforce this, if you will, on a complaint basis. We're not, even though the days change, we're not going to run out, drive around the city to find everyone that doesn't comply. If the neighbors, surrounding neighbors, don't really have an issue with it, then this is an issue. But if somebody is impacted by it, does affect their potentially affect their home value based on the condition of the store there, then they will address it. So that's really our issue. Not having, establishing the criteria, and that's the criteria.
Let me understand this. What you're saying is that the administration doesn't have a problem, per se, with the process. The notion of using the Board of Zoning Appeals as the governing body for this, as the deciding body, it has to do with the criteria, is that right?
The criteria, but if you establish the criteria, then we'll need for the administrative isn't there. If you establish the criteria that we're okay if you have RVs under these conditions, then those are the functions.
Okay, that's different, because what I see as a major issue is the length requirement. Okay. We had 19, and we've been so generous as to increase it to 20, but I think that de facto eliminates what is now essentially the marketplace size of an RV, okay? And I don't know that we've ever done any research about what it really is, but I think we've been told that it's not 19 anymore. So,
it's double or more of that.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's double, but it's more than that. And so, yes, if we could come to some agreement about those things, it absolutely, it eliminates the need for an appeal. I guess my feeling, and I think, Mike, you were involved with the discussion about the appeal process, right? I mean, what the appeal process does is deal with the exceptions. If, in fact, what we have here is a complaint-driven process anyway, and the complaints are few and far between, it creates a process to deal with those small number of complaints. And if, in fact, the size requirement is a piece of that, we should either change the size requirement or put the appeal process in place. I don't agree with your logic, I guess, quite honestly.
If the one thing that you have to bear in mind is, we are primarily obviously, if you see a piece of equipment that's completely falling apart, that's a piece of life. Once the complaint comes in, we go and address that complaint to the person who owns the RV. The date, BZA, all of the surrounding properties have been notified. And now, if you already have a complaint, so you know you have at least one of those complaints. And of course, that's the owner of the RV. Who's right? And you're putting a fire number 12.
Yeah, not to determine it after the fact, though, right? I mean, I think the point is that this is preventive, could be preventive, that if I'm going to go out and buy a 40-foot RV, and I think I want to store it in my backyard, I'm in violation of that. And I, the burden of proof becomes on the owner to say, this is how I'm going to screen it, this is how I'm going to put a, build a pad for it, this is how I'm going to keep it far, as far away as I possibly can from my neighbors. And that all is decided ahead of any kind of complaint, right? Presumably in a appeal process, or in a appeal, it's not an appeal process. It's a licensing process, a permit.
I don't think that's the way it works. The guy will buy the 40-foot motorhome, he'll put it in his backyard, the neighbors are complaining.
Yeah.
And then it gets addressed. He's not going to know we can't get it.
Hmm.
And the other, and we have all, and the, and we have a number of existing, you know, existing situations that we're aware of, that would, you know, that would come up.
You know, we have these points of agreement that you talked about, the 12 points where we did put some more enforcement capabilities on these RVs. It seems like the sticking point at this point for discussion is the size of the recreational vehicle. You know, if we do not have an appellate process but defined criteria in our code that says addresses any recreational vehicle in excess of 20 feet, these additional requirements are there. Either the size of the lot or the amount of setback from the property lines. The types of screening that might be required for it. You can put particular criteria that would apply that can be enforced for anything in excess of 20 feet. Actually, you know, a 30-foot RV is certainly not appropriate on a very small lot, but on a one-acre lot, you could have a 100-foot one, as long as it's got the right setback and criteria. So maybe the focus should be establishing the criteria in our code, eliminating the need for BZA, but put in the criteria for anything in excess of 20 feet. Now, that's certain, not every property owner is entitled to have as large an RV as he wants. You put the criteria in. So maybe that should be more of the focus, is what you want to do for that size vehicle, and just put it in our code. And then they can enforce it on a complaint-driven basis and move on.
I'm thinking, trying to think of the criteria that we would use.
Well, I think the larger the vehicle, the further back from the neighbors it should be. I mean, those are some of the types of things you could, we've talked about those a little bit in the past. And I don't know whether screening is required, more intense screening. I haven't really thought that through.
I think the size of the lot actually is a valid point.
Okay, what's the lot size? What lot size is sufficient?
So I think it's setback as much as anything. The larger in excess of that, the further away, the closer to your own house. I don't know, whatever criteria you might want to appropriately insert. I think folks want to have larger than 20 foot somehow accommodated in our code, and I'm just
trying to. Let's go back to sort of disagreement with Mr. Allard's characterization.
If we're asking them after they've been notified by the city that they're potentially not in compliance, they want to seek a variance. The variance process would presumably talk about what they would do to become in compliance, right? And the variance wouldn't be issued unless they were in compliance. And if they aren't, they get the penalty of whatever the code says. Right? I mean, it gives them specific standards about what they need to do to comply.
What about the guy that buys a 30-foot RV and tries to fit it onto a very small lot in downtown? One of the smallest lots of downtown is right next to my house. Larry DeBarber has that. You put a 30-foot RV in there and there's nothing left.
Right.
So I guess the question is, what's his appellate process?
So I think I think that the size piece, as you've characterized, makes sense. You know, there does need to be an enhanced definition of how larger vehicles are stored. I would support that.
Okay, well, one of the things, and I keep going back to our notes and what we've heard, and one of the things that's in our current list is, it says, or our current list of consensus view items from the memo is that we'd only allow storage in rear yards. But we've got a lot of, but the example on Ball 4 that I'm talking about is a side yard storage situation.
Well, that's not consensus. It's consensus is defined by you, right?
Well, it was what I thought we had coming out of the last meeting. Okay, now, I understand that we didn't, we weren't there. Okay, all right. It was also, that particular point came from the administration memo on the 29th as well. Okay, so after a couple of discussions. We also had a discussion about prohibiting recreational vehicles on corner lots. That, too, is a problem. Okay? So, if I could go back in time, I wouldn't change what we had. I would have left it exactly where it was.
Can we
do frankly, that? That's one solution. Just change it back, and then let people deal with it. But it doesn't really address the, I am sure that property on Ball 4 that I'm thinking of has been there longer than since 2010, and there was never a complaint, and so it was never an issue. But then you have a situation which is, we haven't really addressed the issue. We've just sort of kicked it down the road. The other thing we talked about side yards, if you'll recall, the original legislation that was prepared that went to the Planning Commission talked about, a 3-foot setback on side yards. And I know one of our neighbors who lives on Maple pointed out that would have prohibited his fenced-in boat that you can't even see from the road that looks pretty nice. He's got room in his neighbor's yard is where he, and so it's not really, it hasn't been an issue, and his neighbor isn't happy about it. So, almost whatever we do, we're going to end up with a situation where some folks are not going to be happy with our solution. So at the end of the day, I think it kind of comes down to what we want to do. And Mary, Katie, you want to, I cut you off. I didn't mean to do that.
Well, in my notes from the June 18th meeting, we had a discussion about things being grandfathered in, and we needed to work out the details. I think if we set the criteria as a, to use your term from Doug, the bright line measure and Kevin's specific criteria, and then we have this little piece of the grandfathered in where we need to work out the details. I mean, going forward, we have our bright line, you can't do this, but I mean, the things that seem like we're worried about are the people that already have something set up that nobody's complained about, like the guy on Maple. I've driven by there a bunch of times and never even knew it was there until he mentioned it. I mean, and those are some of the issues that could be grandfathered in. I mean, I don't know how we work in the ground. That was like, sorry about this, Jim, but I have next to you Mom to work out the details on grandfathered in.
It's easy to talk about grandfathering in a piece of real estate or something of that nature, but a movable object from an enforcement standpoint, how do you know that the guys, is it a new RV, an RV that's 15 years old and he's only owned it, then you have to go around and try to garner the evidence to establish.
Well, something's been constructed.
Like
at the guy on Maple that has the fence all the way around. I mean, somebody's got something all dialed out and you can't even see it versus, oh, I had it parked there last year. Well, just because you had it parked there last year, you haven't gone to a big expense to park it next to your house last year. I mean, we're talking like grandfathering in someone that's gone to an expense to construct something or to make it look wonderful, and they spend a lot of money. Those are the people that we don't want to walk around or walk over. I mean,
let me show my ignorance here. That structure on Maple, there had to be a permit issued for that. conceptually, I suppose, there should have been.
From the structure, it would have been a building permit.
It's just a fence. It's a nice fence.
It's just a fence?
It's just a fence, but it's a really nice fence.
And we wouldn't require a permit for an expansion of a paved area on the side of a home.
I said structures are easier, but that's not a structure.
Right. Paving and fencing aren't structures.
And I think going back to the lot size makes a huge amount of sense.
Just saying, you can have larger than 20 feet, but these are the criteria to be able to allow them to be stored in residential areas. I like that approach a lot. And I think if you go to this, it's my own decision. Reach for an excess of 20 feet if you don't put out.
The best possible scenario is that everybody knows these rules, and so that you're thinking about going out and buying an RV, a 40-foot RV, you're already thinking, okay, can I afford to buy it, and can I afford to store it? And I'm going to go buy a 40-foot RV, and oh, now where do I park it? I think I'll put it in my backyard. I mean, that's what we want, right? So it goes back to the grandfather issue a little bit. No, no. Right.
You know, we're talking about criteria, not hearing much of what the general figure was. What were we talking about?
Those are the lots on...
That's the biggest problem. Yes, sir.
Talking about the screening, what if we say, I know the corner lot comes into play too, but what if we say screen from all or any street views, that it needs to be screened from any or all? That would cover the corner lot without saying you have a corner lot, so you're out of the picture. If we make sure that it's screened from and that's what we care about, is the street view. We knew, do need to consider the whole neighborhood, the side. So that would be my suggestion.
Number three is the one that's on the file.
It's the RP. I'm talking about the ones that I've been driving around town looking at these, okay? And there are a large number of them parked beside the garage, outdoor, on paved surfaces that really nobody's ever complained about. We're going to write criteria, but they're not going to. That's what I mean. We're talking, the maple guy, he's going to, his lot's too small. The guy up on Ball Court that I keep talking about. Way at the end of the street, nobody goes down, the street goes down there. But you can clearly see it from the street. Right. Remember, as I think of the recreational vehicles, a vast majority of them, RVs, aren't in backyards, they're in side yards. They're beside the garage. That may not be uniform, you know, and the original rule that was sent to the planning, the original ordinance 24, 2013, had a side yard component.
Yeah, very fast. Yeah, right. Kevin, I've forgotten. Where does the side yard end in the backyard? So, in that particular case, is that how it even kind of out on the side?
No, it's on the side of it's got a house, garage, RV. And there are a number of them around where you have a house with a attached garage. And the RV. The original rule proposed a 3-foot side yard setback from the property line and 5 feet to the rear of the front. That would work most. I didn't get out with a yardstick and measure it, but it's generally somewhat set back from the front of the garage. As I'm thinking of the report. I will say this, there's a lot of this going on. There is a lot. There are a lot of recreational vehicles stored in the city. My guess is that there was a lot of recreational vehicles stored in the city back in 2010. Not all of the vehicles. So, going back to the original memorandum from the city, my effort putting together a consensus view. I think we probably, I like the idea of looking at lot size setback. But when we do that, as we do that, I really wonder if we should take the side yards out of the way out of the park, or do something like what the original proposal.
The original proposal was just minimalistic, just setting it off the side yards and letting it down. If it somehow accommodated the length of the size of vehicles, and it kind of tried to address it that way, it may be just for a few hours.
A lot of them screening on the side.
Yeah.
In other words, they screened up from their next door neighbor. Not so much from the front in the street.
More workable than the other world if it's like that. You know, if we're talking about the types of setbacks that we originally proposed, and if you run through the play of screening and try to help with the fines, additional restrictions for those vehicles in excess of 20, but there's something related to the size or dimensions of the property. It's probably a sufficient. I don't know if Kevin wants to go to comment, but just a chance to just tell me again.
I got to,
We need to grapple with it, and I think that it's a more attainable task. The BCA is a real problem for us.
Okay, so we're going to get away from the BCA. Going back to this memo that we were talking about before, one of the comments we got from Planning Commission was they wanted more description of good repair. A lot of these requirements are already in our code, so we're just going to add the really, and we have pretty good agreement on what's in the code. For example, you know, we're very, I don't think anybody thinks we want people living or housekeeping in these recreational vehicles, and I know, you know, that happens, but. So just going over these 8 or 9 points, the first requirement was that all recreational vehicles and structures be kept in good repair and carry current license plates as required. That's in our code now. We're planning to keep that. And I think, Jim, what the Planning Commission asked for was additional description of what good repair was to clarify that permanently unusable equipment doesn't qualify, and I'm not sure, and I wasn't, just looking at the minutes, it's hard for me to tell exactly what they were getting at. Maybe we could. And then we have this requirement that no recreational vehicle be parked or stored on property unless it's titled to, leased, or used exclusively by one or more of the permanent occupants of the residence. I think that's a good, we don't want third parties parking RVs. You own the home, you're going to take better care of the recreational vehicle. Now, this third point, I think we had talked about, only one recreational vehicle shall be parked in the rear yard, no side or front yard. I think what we've discussed here today is we'd like to accommodate side yards in a manner consistent with the original legislation. No front yard, but a side yard subject to the 5-foot setback.
It shall be no less than 3 feet from the side, and it was 3 to 5, and it's 5 back from the front.
Yeah, 5 feet from the front, 3 feet from the side.
That is sticking across the process to a big boat of parks side
right.
Side company president. How do we decide to make the 5 foot setback from the side instead of the 3?
Okay.
That's a D, so
it's that's what it says, but that sounds like it's voice. I think the 5 feet is probably what we need to do. We did that because that's what the
you're right.
For a accessory process. All
right. We talked about the fourth point was that would be a minimum of 5 feet from any lot line,
right.
Front or rear or side.
That, I think we need to stick to that. That's how it is started.
Okay. And I think that's right.
But this is,
and that's just move off a lot of those side yard.
Yeah.
Drives.
That is going to impact the maple.
But that's not right. Something the city should have to show the yard still.
Right.
Yeah. But if somebody falls off with a complaint, that
right.
Would be the criteria.
Right.
What is missing from number 4 is the additional 5 foot setback in the front of the house. We're going to insert that.
Yeah. We could insert that. In defining the circumstances under which side yard storage would be appropriate, we would put in the 5 foot setback from the front of the house.
Yeah.
So, you measure it from the tongue of the trailer.
I thought the tongue was attached to the car.
Yeah.
I think you take it from
oh, I see.
The closest corner.
Yeah, the trailer is the closest corner.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
I think it's the closest point.
Yeah.
But you're right. Maybe the wheels. I found a boat like that. I probably go to the closest point.
The purpose of the setback is to, we talked about was for safety and maintenance, be able to get around it and cut it. So it's whether the boat's on a, it seems to me,
Well, this boat may very well meet this criteria.
But the trailer may not. It would. I don't like to see.
This boat?
Yes.
It's going to be, I don't know how much side yard he's got.
I don't think there's any.
This guy's complaining.
This was a resident of the area.
All right. So, and we agree with no fixed connections to electrical, water, gas, or sewer facilities. This will not be used for living or housekeeping purposes. And we also have this requirement, recreational vehicles must be on a hard surface, crushed stone, concrete, or asphalt. That would also address this boat issue, if it's not. Adding the requirement that a recreational vehicle shall not be covered with any type of tarp, other than cover specifically manufactured for the vehicle or equipment being stored. Right.
Yeah, they don't have to be covered. The way this is written, you don't have to report. I think basically the question before you have
this.
I don't think an uncovered boat is necessarily a problem. It's for the owner, it would be silly to do that, but they
know if we want to impose the requirements, they must be covered.
No.
Because that sort of applies to recreational vehicles too, like, they're going to put a tarp over that.
Now, we added this requirement, no recreational vehicle shall be visible from an adjoining street. Screening is permissible to accomplish this requirement. I think our discussion today is that the visibility from an adjoining street isn't a problem. What do we think about screening? Well, I'm thinking this ninth, it's number nine, that is on both my memo and your city's memo, for the administration's memo. I don't think we want to do, I don't think we want to require screening from, I don't think it's screening from the front isn't the problem.
I think from the front is probably not the problem. It's the side corner lots where you can see the recreational vehicle, and triple sets of this to try to minimize the people that are saying, you're diminishing our property values because these RVs are visible. I think that's what we're trying to address, not necessarily the front.
Okay, so I guess that's adjoining street is the issue. Okay, screening from...
Yeah, that could be...
The specific issue there, which is that the homeowners will know that they're tied away.
Right.
Fairly big lot. Their concern is if you see it from the side.
See, that gets to this hard standard.
Yeah, hard to figure out how to, that's a tough one.
So what are we...
Well... The nice thing is, if you say number nine, no recreational vehicle shall be visible from an adjoining street, that eliminates the requirement of screening in front on the street, on the house.
It does.
So that solves that problem.
Okay, see, I didn't understand what we were going to find, adjoining street.
Going behind, flooding adjoining, I'm not sure. But if appropriately screened, and approved by the public service director, that accomplishes the visibility. Because you're always going to be able to see it. And I think it's pretty hard to make something that's big disappear. Yeah. Stripes and solids and
right.
Then we put the additional requirement, sort of try to address the corner lot matter. I have a further setback of 60 feet, which was the distance for a structure to be close to the right of way.
Who was that?
The 60 foot came from, if you're going to have it on a corner lot, if you're going to jump to address the corner lot issue, that, you don't want it 5 feet out of the lot line, and you want it 60 feet back, because that's the minimum front footage from a structure to a street. So, if that's the case, probably should be 65 feet, if we're putting into the criteria 5 feet for the front of the house. But that's where it came from. What about, but with that, but the side lot would also be on the street, wouldn't it? 60 or 65.
Okay, wait. I understand what you're. I'm not. Where'd the 65 foot
Well, 60 feet is the minimum distance for a house to be to a street. And that's why we said we would certainly go on and not be any closer to the public.
On the side.
On the side. And then I got waylaid into thinking should have been at least 5 feet, which it could be.
But this we agree with that, the side of the side.
Oh, yeah. Question is, where could you get any more? And I'm not going to fight that.
Mike, this was an issue for you.
We have that new additional requirement. I mean,
you just don't pull it up.
It might appear that we've got, in these ways, a confusing consensus, but number 1 to 10 are not really causing tremendous problems today. We're still.
With the addition of the site.
Yeah. With the right. We have to put the 5 foot setback from the front of the house, and we have to look at the issue of defining good repair, and then we have to address those vehicles in excess of 20 feet in some form of fashion.
This is without all the requirements as to length. We've got to put it back in, say it's more than 20 feet here, especially.
Yeah, I think that's what I mean.
That's what
we need. Right. So that it be clear that the larger.
The permission is
that we permit, which is the fees trying to get that anyway. And then quickly, the subsequent fee, if that is subsequent stuff, maybe start right there. I don't know.
I don't know.
Or maybe it's the side yard.
I think we would establish this criteria for the speed of the side.
If you got a wide enough bomb, the side yard's on it.
Yeah, I mean,
it gets us put farther away.
Yeah, I don't think this, I don't have a problem with this recreational vehicle, but I have my head on ball for it. But it's a big, wide lot.
And recall, with a lot of my concern is folks that are about 27 pounds, so that's from some distance to there, and there's a bit of a 25 years without folks. I think there you could get a program about 20.
Additional requirements.
Because if somebody, and it's clear that somebody wanted to move like this, liberal or family to work for people now, these people need to serve it.
For the record, you can't park the recreational vehicle anywhere in my yard. Yeah, and a very shallow. That's okay. That's okay.
We really should not craft it.
I have my motorcycle in my garage.
Most of the insurance will bother and subdivision lots. You're going to have a really hard time getting around the house.
Yeah.
Whether it's a cul-de-sac property. Most of the time, like, it's like an alley behind me. Or wide, like, sideways, because they're like.
Yes.
One of the complaints that we had early on is a yard where there was a boat in the backyard and it's being worked on, started, stop. And that, we haven't addressed that. I think we have something in the code about people working on their cars in their, what that was, something about that. And do we need that something in here to discourage in some way the this activity that's going on that upset the one neighbor?
Yeah, I think the way we hoped to address that was in this definition of good repair. And I think that's maybe that's what the planning commission, sure, when they were talking about permanently unusable equipment. If somebody's just working on a boat, it's never going to run. But I've never been a photo owner. My grandfather was a photo owner, and he was always working on his boat, constantly working on that boat, doing something. I think a lot of photo on Israel, but there's always something.
I bet the
scientists
are very different as
well. Jim, do you have any sense of this grip repair idea? Because I know I wrote it in my notes.
Let us talk about it with the staff and see if we can come up with something that we may get a little more direction on it.
Okay. So I'm going to take another shot at this consensus view memo. Sure. And then let's see what we get. I think we're in agreement on maybe pretty good agreement on 11 things. With the 12th one being bigger boats, specified criteria, or bigger vehicles, specified criteria.
What was the 11th one outside for the...
That recreational vehicles in residential zoning districts shall not exceed 20 feet length.
Okay.
If you're going to be bigger than 20 feet, special rules.
Right.
And we're going to remove 1121. Seven. Okay. Well, I think pretty well. So, do you have anything else to,
if you want us to try to draft and address these issues and redistribute it to the members of your committee and decide whether you want to call a mini meeting before a council meeting and see if we can move it along. Is that how you'd like to
draft some legislation?
Yeah. And but I think you need to take another look at it. It shouldn't be nearly as long.
Yeah, the thing we need to look at, when you have some view on maybe you could report to us on the view about the criteria for the larger buildings. And then we'll have to probably talk about that.
We'll send everybody.
Yeah, and I know Mary was going to be here today, but she has a council. So I'm going to take another shot at this memo, circulate it, and then we'll wait to hear a report from you. Anything else to talk about? I think you guys did a great job. Thank you. So, I think, entertain a motion to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
We need
to adjourn at 8:15.